If you're in the middle of your holiday shopping, you'll probably stumble into a record store at some point. While you peruse row upon row of CDs, consider for a moment what you don't see. We're compiling a wish list of some of the best old recordings that have yet to be released on compact disc. Every Sunday in December, we're putting this question to people throughout the music community. What are the best albums that have never made it to CD?
Hi, this is Jan Uhelski. I'm one of the founding editors of Cream Magazine, that we used to call America's only rock and roll magazine. The recording I've selected today is Joe Bryath's first album, Joe Bryath, released in October of 1973. It is probably the most costly yet least successful hype in rock history.
I'm a man. So I'm an elegant man, I'm a man.
Joe Bryath began life as Bruce Campbell in 1946, the child of an army professional. And he was also gay, and that didn't distress his parents so much as the fact that he was a piano prodigy. So he left home, and he made his way to L.A. A rock impresario who was the former manager of Carly Simon convinced him to come back to New York with him, hired Eddie Kramer, the engineer for the Hendrix albums, and put in the studio with him and cut an album. They probably spent more on promotion than they did on the actual recording. They bought this huge billboard that they erected over Times Square. It was the album cover, which showed a nude Joe Bryath kind of in a dog-like pose with a strange mime expression on his face, heavily made up. It wouldn't have been so bad, except the fact was the music just didn't stand up to the huge buildup. It wasn't bad, it was credible music, but everyone is expecting the second coming. I think his importance has grown over the years. I think what we're missing is the first out rock star. His songs really are overt gay anthems, and no one was doing that. I mean, these were innocent times. It's 1973. I think that we missed how important he was to the gay movement. I mean, he didn't get his due. He became a joke then, and now he's an icon.
Hi, my name is Bruce Boyd Rayburn, and I'm the curator of the Hogan Jazz Archive at Tulane University. And the recordings that I've selected are a couple of 78s that were made in New Orleans on March 20th, 1949. These are recordings made by the 6th and 7/8 String Band of New Orleans. The 6th and 7/8 String Band had seven members, although they called it 6 and 7/8 because their violinist, Hilton Midget Harrison, was so small that the other members felt he shouldn't be counted as a whole musician, and so that's where the 7/8 comes in. These were dedicated amateurs, so this is the kind of music they made for friends and family. But when they were first starting out, this band was very popular among the Uptown Society crowd because they were a kind of softer alternative to the usual blaring jazz band of the pre-World War I period. The 6th and 7/8 band is really the first documentation of the hot jazz string band tradition of New Orleans, which was built on a number of bands from the 1890s on. These are bands that never recorded. And so if we want to have some insight into this hot string band tradition, we can't do any better than the 6th and 7/8 band. To some extent, this is a lost art.
My name is Paul Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, that subliminal kid. The recordings I've selected, it's recorded by a gentleman named Lionel Mapleson. He was the librarian of the Metropolitan Opera, and he recorded all these wild extracts of operas there. So he's considered to be the first mixtape guy, or the first mixed record of all his favorite moments, which, of course, is leading up to sampling, and that's what I'm into. I'm a writer, artist, and musician whose work uses this as its sort of, you know, basic, fundamental raison d'être, as they say in French. He recorded the recordings on a 40-foot catwalk above the stage at the Metropolitan Opera. There would be these kind of weird old phonograph horns placed around, and that's how he got the sound. And what's fascinating, again, with that is that the idea of recording becomes an action just as important, if not more so, in terms of history, in terms of keeping the documents of what's going on. And as a DJ, you know, you're just playing with that. I like to, I like to say digging in the crates is a hip-hop phrase when you're looking for old, rare records. So this is super rare. I'm fascinated with when people check in on their favorite moments from favorite songs from, you know, different situations, because sound is a way of kind of playing with memory. Back in 1903 and earlier, you know, cylinder recordings were the first method to really deal with that. And Mapleson is, you know, kind of a liminal figure in early recording culture because he was a hobbyist and he was passionate about keeping track of all these things, just like, you know, any record collector fanatic out there. You guys will know what I'm talking about.
Lionel Mapleson's cylinder recordings of the New York Metropolitan Opera. That's DJ Spooky's addition to the CD wish list. We also heard from Bruce Boyd Rayburn with the 6 and 7/8 string band and Jan Uhelski presenting Jabriath. We'll add 3 more pieces of vinyl to the CD wish list next week. Visit our website for extended interviews with all our contributors, as well as an address where you can make your own suggestions. Go to npr.org.